trading stories all night. Far, far away, deep in the blue, the dolphins and the mermaids, the jellyfish too, they tell stories in bubbles that pop. The sun sets on the ocean, but they never stop. Tell us a tale, tell us a tale. Stories don't live in a storybook, they're all around us if we look. Tales are for telling, so tell us one more. Tell us a tale, tell us a tale.
Peter Jones, and you are indeed listening to Tell Us a Tale, where Jen Hoffman and I are going to tell you a couple of tales about brains over brawn, starting with one of my all-time favorites, Mule Eggs, adapted by Cynthia DeFelice, and that's published by Orchard Books.
When Patrick moved from the city to the country and bought himself a farm, the other farmers, they just shook their heads.
He's a city slicker, and a city's where he belongs.
Why, he doesn't know a pitchfork from a plow.
He don't know which end of a cow to milk.
He would have known beans if his head was in the pot.
They all agreed that Patrick would never make it as a farmer, but a farmer is what Patrick wanted to be. Now, Patrick had noticed that all the other farmers owned at least one mule. So one fall day, Patrick headed to the market to buy one for himself. By and by, he passed a farmer who was working in his pumpkin patch.
Why, good day to you, neighbor.
Why, if it ain't Patrick. You on your way back to the city there, Patrick?
Oh, no, I'm off to the city to buy me a mule.
You saying you're going to the city?
Oh, I'm sorry, I was talking about the market.
Okay, you're going to be buying a mule, you say?
That's right.
And he looked around at all the pumpkins ripening in the field, while Patrick had never seen pumpkins growing before.
Hey, how'd you grow such big orange apples? And come to think of it, where's the tree?
Why, Patrick, those ain't apples.
They're not? What are they?
Nope, they is eggs.
Oh, eggs. What kind of eggs are they?
Why, these mule eggs, Patrick.
Mule eggs? You mean to tell me that your mule ate all those?
Yes, indeed.
You mean to tell me that a little baby mule's gonna hatch out of each one of those eggs?
Yes, sirree, Bob.
And the farmer reached down and picked up a big pumpkin, and he felt it all around mighty carefully.
Why, listen's nice and ripe there, Patrick. Yep, I can hear a little feller in there kicking. You want to buy this one?
Oh, yes. I surely would like to buy a little baby mule colt. But how much does a baby mule egg cost?
I reckon I could give it to you for only $25, seeing as it's you, Patrick.
Okay. Wow.
And Patrick happily paid the farmer $25.
Wow. Now I'll have my mule and my money left over, too. Wow.
Well, as Patrick carried his mule egg down the road, the farmer called after him.
Remember now, Patrick, an egg's got to stay warm. You got to wrap some blankets around it to make it a little nest. And you'll have to sit on it, of course, too, just like a mama mule. Now watch it real careful. It's about ready to hatch.
Well, Patrick all was right. so excited. He went hurrying home to put his mule leg in a nice warm place. But he was so excited that he didn't watch where he was going, and he tripped over a log and he stubbed his toe. And the pumpkin went flying out of his arms and went rolling down the hill. And it rolled and it bounced and it landed right in the middle of a big briar patch. It smashed against a rock and it busted wide open.
Oh, no.
Patrick watched his egg break. Just then, a rabbit, frightened by the crash and rolling pumpkin, ran out of the other side of the briar patch.
Oh, no, my baby mule.
And he began chasing that rabbit from one briar patch to another, calling,
Here, little muley, come back to Patrick, come back to your mama.
Poor Patrick.
Oh.
But no matter how fast he ran, Patrick couldn't catch up to that rabbit, and finally he just plumb gave up. He walked back down the road and said to the farmer,
Why, of all the bad luck, that egg hatched before I could get it home. That little baby mule was so fast, I couldn't catch it.
Patrick, would you like to buy another one?
Could I? I've only got $25 left, okay?
Okay there, Patrick.
Only this time, give me one that's not quite so ripe.
Here, take this one. In fact, I think there's twins in this one.
Twins? Imagine that!
The farmer watched Patrick walk away with his egg.
What a noodlehead.
So Patrick built a nest in the barn and began sitting. And he sat, and he sat on that egg. And he sat, and he sat, but nothing happened. Why, he sat and he sat and he sat some more, but still nothing happened. And as he sat, Patrick looked around the barnyard, and he watched the chickens and the ducks and the barn swallows all sitting on their nests. And he watched the pigs and the cows and the horses. And not one of them was sitting on a nest. Suddenly, Patrick felt very foolish. He jumped off the nest, crying,
Why, people don't sit on nests. And mules don't hatch from eggs. That farmer's trying to make a goose out of me.
Patrick went into the house and he thought for a long, long time.
Maybe I am a city slicker, but I know a few tricks too.
Patrick mixed together some water and grape juice in a small bottle.
Yep.
He shook it well and put it in his pocket. And then he got his last $50. He went to the market and bought himself 2 baby mules. On the way home, he made sure to pass by the farmer's field. Farmer looked up and saw Patrick with his 2 beautiful baby mules.
Where'd you get those mules there, Patrick?
Why, from the egg, you sold me. Where else? And you were right. There were twins in there. Aren't they fine looking?
Patrick, you're not trying to tell me you got those mules out of that pump. I mean, that egg I sold you, are you?
Why, yes, of course. Isn't that what you said would happen?
Yeah.
But it didn't quite work quite the way you said it would.
It didn't?
Nope. I sat on that egg like you told me to do, but nothing happened. I was just about to give up when I remembered my transmogrification potion.
Say that again. You're what?
My transmogrification potion. Here, it's right here in this bottle. I don't know why I didn't use it in the first place.
What's whatchamacallit potion?
You mean you've never heard of it? Why, people in the city have been using it for years.
But what does it do, Patrick?
Why, it's very scientific. You see, it works according to the principles of frivolity and obscurity. It can create an entirely new object simply by changing gleeps into bleeps.
The farmer was very, very confused.
But you don't need to understand all that big city talk. It's very simple to use. When I rubbed some of the potion on the egg you sold me, it transmogrified right into my twin mules right here. Why, with a little bit of this stuff, you could have a whole herd of mules. You'd be rich.
So Patrick turned away and he began leading his mules home while the farmer just looked on after him.
Patrick, wait. Have you got any of that that stuff for sale?
Well, I suppose I could spare a bottle, seeing as it's you.
Great. How much you want there, Patrick?
Why, $50 a bottle. What, that's nothing to a man who's about to become rich.
Okay, here you go there, Patrick, $50. And you say I'll just rub it on the pumpkin, eggs, is that right?
Well, yes, but there's one more thing. You must let the eggs know what you want them to transmogrify into. In this case, it's very easy. Every time you rub an egg with a potion, you just have to say, hee-haw, hee-haw.
Hee-haw, hee-haw, like that?
Yeah, but you gotta sound a little more ornery. You know, stubborn like a mule.
Hee-haw, 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 hee-haw.
That's better. It takes a little while to work, so don't give up. Keep at it until you got all the mules you want.
Oh, I will. I definitely will. Thanks, Patrick.
And the farmer began rubbing the potion on a large pumpkin, and he was saying,
hee-haw, hee-haw, hee-haw.
The farmer's bellows followed Patrick and his baby mules as they walked on down the road toward home. Well, that night, when Patrick climbed into bed, he could hear that the farmer was still hard at work. As for Patrick, he named his little mule colt Tit for Tat, and that's that, and folks say he's doing right well as a farmer after all.
My uncle had an old gray mule, his name was Simon Slick. About anything I ever did see was how that mule could kick. Ho, mule, ho, ho, that mule I say, keep your seat, Miss Liza, ain't got long to stay. I went to feed that mule one day, he met me with a smile. He backed one ear, winked one eye, and kicked me half a mile. Whoa, mule, ho, ho, that mule I say, keep your seat, Miss Liza, ain't got long to stay. Now this mule was a big one, he weighed 10,000 pounds. Every tooth he had in his head was 18 inches round. Whoa, mule, ho, ho, that mule I say, keep your seat, Miss Liza, ain't got long to stay. I took him to the blacksmith shop to get his mouth made small. He opened his mouth, took a yawn, swallowed blacksmith shop and all. Whoa, mule, ho, ho, that mule I say, keep your seat, Miss Liza, ain't got long to stay. Keep your seat, Miss Liza, ain't got long to stay.
Off Pete Seeger's album Birds, Beasts, Bugs, and Fishes, Little and Big, that was Old Gray Mule. You're listening to Tell Us a Tale.
This is Bird Note. When they migrate, tiny songbirds that spend most of their lives on land fly hundreds of miles over the ocean at a stretch, and they get tired. That's why the first stretch of coast along a migration route often has thousands of exhausted birds landing and taking a break. There are also stories about ships at sea hosting worn-out migratory birds, but for the most part, scientists saw those as rare events. However, a new study suggests it could be more common than once thought. A group of oceanographers spent a few weeks in the Mediterranean Sea and noticed something unusual. Nearly every day that summer, more than one bird would land on their boat and spend a few minutes or a few hours aboard before flying away. And they weren't just seabirds like gulls. They were land birds that don't frequent the high seas, apparently catching their breath on the boat, and then resuming their epic journeys. The researchers think that there are now enough ships in the busy Mediterranean trade routes that some birds might use them as stopover sites when the weather turns bad. Like any expert traveler, birds know how to use their resources to make it to their destination. For BirdNote, I'm Ariana Rimmel.
For our next tale about brains over brawn, we're going to tell you the Slavic tale, The Little Girl and the Big Bear, adapted by Joanna Galdone, and that's published by Houghton Mifflin.
Once long ago, a little girl lived with her grandparents in a village near a great forest. One day, her friends came by and said,
"The berries of the forest are ripe now.
Let's go and pick them.
Come on, let's go."
So the little girl ran to her grandparents.
"Oh, please let me go to the forest with my friends, please."
"Certainly, but be sure to stay close to one another."
"Be very careful, dear, okay?"
"Come back in one piece."
The little girl and her friends ran deep into the forest.
"Wow!
Look at all the berries.
They're everywhere."
By and by, the little girl said,
"Oh, my basket is filled to the brim."
But when she turned around, there was no one in sight.
"Yoo-hoo! Hello?"
"Yoo-hoo! Hello?"
her echo called back to her. She had wandered far away from her friends.
"I'll have to find my way back alone, I guess."
So the little girl climbed up the hills and jumped across streams and crawled over boulders. All through the forest she walked, but she couldn't find her way home. At last, she reached a part of the forest full of tangled vines and huge trees that seemed to stare at her in the dusk. Then just ahead, she saw a little hut. She knocked on the door, but there was no answer. So she gave the door a push and swung it open.
"Who lives here in the wildest and thickest part of the forest, I wonder? And, well, why aren't they home?"
It was getting dark.
"I might as well stay here for the night. Then I'll try to find my way home in the morning, I guess."
She had just sat down on a bench to rest when suddenly she heard a great... She jumped with a start. In through the door walked a huge bear. He stopped short and growled down at the little girl. But then he smiled and said,
Oh my, what a fine surprise. I can't believe my very own eyes. A tempting dinner you'd make, it's true. But I've a better idea. Here's what I'll do. You will be my servant, faithful and true. You'll sweep my floor. You'll set my table. You'll take care of me as long as you're able. And I'll never let you go.
The little girl cried and cried for a long time, but it was no use. She had to stay and keep house for the bear just as he had said. Early every morning, the bear tramped off into the woods and left the little girl alone for the whole day. But each time before he left, he said,
little girl, don't run away here in my hut. You must stay.
And the little girl did stay, for she was afraid to disobey him. But one morning the little girl thought,
Grandma and Grandpa will be so worried about me. I must try to escape.
So after the bear had left for the day, she tiptoed out of the hut and quietly walked into the forest. She hadn't gone far when she heard a growl behind her. The bear came running and said,
If you try this again, you know what I'll do. I'll chop you in pieces and cook up a stew.
The little girl wanted to get home alive, so she walked sadly back to the hut. That night she lay in her cot beside the fire and thought about how she could get away from the bear. All around stretched the great forest. There was no one to ask which way to go. Day after day she thought, and she thought, until at last she had an idea. One evening when the bear came back from the forest, the little girl said to him,
"Oh, please, bear, please let me go home for a day to see Grandma and Grandpa. I miss them so much, and I want to bring them something really good to eat."
"What you'll do on your own is simple to tell, so I'll take them the goodies. I know the woods well."
Now that was just what the little girl wanted. Early the next morning, she baked some delicious berry pies and put them on a plate. Then she got out a large basket, and when the bear came into the kitchen, the little girl said,
"I'll put the pies in this basket so you can carry them to Grandma and Grandpa, but you must promise not to stop along the way and eat them, okay? I'm going to climb to the top of the tallest oak tree, and from there I'll be able to see everything you do."
"Give the basket to me, and I'll do as you say. I know the way well. I'll be back in a day."
"Huh. Do I hear rain on the roof? Well, the pies mustn't get wet."
And while the bear went outside to look, the little girl quickly got into the basket, put the pies over her head, and closed the lid.
"It's not raining. The sun is shining."
But the little girl was nowhere in sight. The bear looked all around the hut for her and then said,
"She must have climbed into the oak tree already. Those pies smell good. I think I'll have a look."
He lifted the lid of the basket and peeped inside. The little girl held her breath.
"So many juicy pies."
But he had promised not to eat them, so he closed the lid.
"My, those pies are heavy."
And he slung the basket on his back and started off for the little girl's village. He tramped uphill past the spruce trees. He clumped downhill around the birch trees. He clambered over rocks and boulders, and he splashed through streams. He tramped and stomped and clumped and splashed till at last he was so tired he had to stop.
"Oh, my feet are so weary. My back is aching. Those pies would taste good now. They're mine for the taking."
And he sat down on a rock to rest. But the little girl called out in a small voice as if she were a long way away.
"I see you. I see you. Get back on your feet. Go on with your work. Not one pie may you eat."
"Dear me. What sharp eyes that girl has. She sees everything."
The bear walked on and on till he could walk no more. So he stopped and said again,
"My feet are so weary. My back is aching. Those pies would taste good now. They're mine for the taking."
"I see you. I see you. Get back on your feet. Get on with your walk. Not one pie may you eat."
So tramp, tramp, clumpity clump, stompity stomp, and curse, splishity splash, the bear went on a little faster than before, and at last he reached the village, and soon he found the cottage where the little girl's grandmother and grandfather lived. The bear banged on the gate as hard as he could.
"Open the gate. I have a surprise. Your granddaughter sends you a basket of pies."
And soon the village dogs smelled the bear. From every yard ran all kinds and sizes of dogs, just as the little girl had thought they would. They yipped and yapped, and they raced toward the bear. The bear's fur bristled. He set down the basket with a thump and began to run, with all the dogs following close behind. At the edge of the forest, the bear stopped. Quickly, the dog surrounded him. The bear growled down at them, and they all growled back. Suddenly, a little dog rushed up to the bear and nipped at his heels. The bear reared up, and with one last great growl, he ran off into the forest and never once looked back. The little girl's grandmother and grandfather heard all the commotion and hurried to the gate.
Oh, what's in the basket?
The grandfather lifted the top, and a face dripping red and purple looked up at them.
Grandma, Grandpa, I missed you.
The old man and the old woman were overjoyed. There was their granddaughter, dripping with berry juice from the broken pies, but alive and well. The grandmother and grandfather didn't mind. They were just so happy to see her, they could have eaten her right up.
And the background of that story was music off Rick Lushard's album, Good Morning, Johann. Well, we're going to close out this half hour now with our friends Jan Smith, Jeff Vogelzang, Tom Prout, and Fred Boyce doing a little bit of the traditional tune, Old Slewfoot. So we'll see you again soon, right here on Tell Us a Tale.
Open Mic on CJSF 90.1 is where you can listen to fresh new releases from any genre, any day of the week. Visit cjsf.ca for the latest open mic schedule.